When I think about the language JavaScript, I think about something that's been traditionally kind of underappreciated. I mean, I looked at it several years ago and thought, my gripes with the language are mostly that its platform support is so bad. I try it on different web browsers, the main environment where I can get to it, and it's inconsistent between those. But when I look at it as a language, there are a couple of things that bother me, but about as much as any other mainstream programming language. And that was about the first time I took it seriously.
Yeah.
I know you've been working with it and writing about it for much, much longer than I have. What
Right.
drew you to the language from the start?
I started working on JavaScript back in 1996, right after I'd written Java in a nutshell. You know, you have to go back a ways to remember what the web was like then. You know, the web was new. The first commercial sites were coming out, and applets appeared on the scene, and all of a sudden we could have, this is before animated GIFs. The only way to have animation on the web was with Java applets. That was a huge thing, and I wrote the Java in a Nutshell book, and timing was good, and people liked the book. I remember being at the Java 1 conference. I'd been signing books, and it was lunch break, and I was behind some Sun engineers. I think they did security stuff for Java or something, and they were like, so David, what are you going to write about next? Assuming I was going to continue with Java. And I said, you know, I'm thinking that my next book's going to have to be about JavaScript. They were appalled. And they just, I don't know, lost a lot of respect for me or something. They couldn't see that JavaScript was going to have a much larger impact on the web. You know, Java went on to have a huge impact on the server side, of course, but apps fade into pretty much obscurity because JavaScript was just more tightly tied to the content of pages, even back then. So it was kind of a natural outgrowth of my work with Java, in the sense that Java was, at the time, a web technology, a client-side technology, and JavaScript seemed like the next big thing.
That seems like so long ago, though.
Yeah, it's strange to think. When Zip Edition of my definitive guide came out, I didn't realize this until it was just about to go to the printer. I looked back at the printing history of it, you know, inside the front cover and realized that the Zip Edition was coming out almost exactly 10 years after the first edition did. To go back to some of your earlier points about the language, I've always felt that the core language itself was fairly stable and reasonably consistent across browsers. Once we got past Internet Explorer 3, it seemed like the core language was fairly consistently implemented, and that wasn't the problem. But all the headaches that anyone who worked with JavaScript on the web suffered were inconsistencies in the client-side document object model. That's crucial for using JavaScript on the web, but it's not about the language itself. And you know, finally, we're growing out of that too, I think. But I think it's in Douglas Crockford's new book, JavaScript: The Good Parts. His philosophy, and I can't quote him exactly, but he's been known to say something to the effect of, basically, that JavaScript is this ugly language with a beautiful language hidden inside or something.
And that sounds really familiar, yeah.
Yeah, and if you just use the good parts, which he writes about in his book, you know, that's just the beautiful stuff, and it's a pretty elegant language.
Seems to fit pretty well with how the XML community has treated the DOM as well. Thinking, well, okay, we have this model, but programming against it is a real pain, and there are all these other models for processing and consuming and producing XML that have nothing to do with the DOM, except that it's there, they don't have to worry about it so much. It's just a model that's there, and I wonder if his comment comes from the idea that, okay, the DOM is there, we know how to work with it, but it's not a pretty thing.
You know, I think Douglas Crockford's point, he's limiting his comments to the language itself, not the client-side binding to the DOM. He's talking about there's a few warts on the language, because really it was produced, you know, back in early dot-com boom days. Brendan Eich had serious deadlines when he was cranking this language out. Some of that is reflected on, you know, some unfortunate choices that have persisted. But overall, for considering how quickly the first version of the language was whipped together, it's been remarkably appropriate for what it's used for. The DOM and XML. That was the history of that is kind of strange too. As I recall, the DOM started being defined specifically for web browsers and HTML, and then all the XML people kind of took over, and it grew unwieldy and huge, and expanded to encompass CSS and all sorts of things.
The history of web standards in a nutshell there.
They grow until they can handle XML. That's a whole other topic, but we probably shouldn't go there. I'll say things I regret about XML.
Well, what surprised me about JavaScript is that it's like Ruby, I guess. People were doing great things in it for a while, but then something suddenly happened, and all of a sudden people started taking it seriously. And in my mind, I think a lot of people tie that back to the introduction of Google Maps, where people said, wait, you were doing what now? You can do this with JavaScript. You can do this on the client side. And all of a sudden, we'll call it the post-Google Maps explosion, where people are able to identify the use of JavaScript asynchronous requests, XML HTTP requests, and say, here's a way to get beyond the statelessness of HTTP and do more client-side that makes us work like a desktop application.
Yeah, I think your analogy is good, that the appearance of Ajax did for JavaScript what Rails did for Ruby. At least it seemed that way to me at the time. And I really regret, when I was writing the fourth edition of my book, I came across XML HTTP requests in, I think, Microsoft documentation. So they were the first ones to introduce it.
Right.
And I kind of didn't get it and dismissed it and didn't cover it. You know, it's not standard. The fourth edition, I was really focused on web standards. Finally, we were emerging from the dark days of browser incompatibilities, and there was a DOM, and I was really focused on, you know, this is the standard, and I'm sticking to it. And I missed out on that one, because it actually has been around since 2001 or 2002. Ajax, it took 4 years or something of no one doing it, and all of a sudden, yeah, Google pioneered it, and got the catchy acronym for it, and all of a sudden, it was everywhere.
Sort of maybe a vindication of all of those years laboring for just using JavaScript to switch images if you didn't want to rely on CSS Hover, for example.
Right. Well, you know, people were switching images with JavaScript before CSS.
That's true.
Could do that.
Netscape 4, you had to enable JavaScript to get CSS to work in the first place. That was an odd period in the web.
That was sort of the time when Netscape came out on the wrong side of the web standards, trying to push things too much themselves. You know, usually we think of Microsoft as the one evolving incompatibly. The Netscape 4 was a weird time.
Yeah, I don't miss those days. Well, speaking of web browsers, if you look at technologies such as Mozilla and some of the derivative products, Songbird, mm-hmm. Komodo, those are primarily desktop applications built in a combination of XML and JavaScript. And that sounds strange to me. I still have a hard time wrapping my head around the notion of building a desktop application in JavaScript.
And XML, which is, I assume you're talking about Zool.
I'm talking about Zool.
Yeah. I remember thinking that was pretty cool when Mozilla announced it. I never really did that much with it. I played around with it some and got hung up on, you know, XML is just not a language to be describing things in. I use it all the time for writing books. It's a text markup language is what it was created for, and everyone tries to cram it into, you know, make a programming language out of it. XSL, for example, I think is an abomination.
It's a scheme with an uglier syntax, basically.
Yeah, well, infinitely uglier. You can't really get any worse than that, it seems to me. But like I said, I really shouldn't go down that path. Zool seems like a pretty neat idea to leverage that HTML renderer and the GUI library that's in that Mozilla, in their core library, and be able to build your own stuff with it. And obviously, more than the HTML renderer, the web fetching all their stuff is there, and you can access it in a high-level way. Their API was unfortunate, as I recall, in JavaScript, just because they were trying to mimic Microsoft's object technology or whatever. It was so abstract and hard to use.
Some version of COM or
Corp. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that seems like a real stumbling block to me. But the idea is a pretty nifty one. Speaking for JavaScript specifically, it's a perfectly powerful language for that, and I'm sure that Mozilla had confidence in their implementation. You know, if you're going to be doing that, obviously, you didn't have the browser incompatibility issues. Mozilla defined the JavaScript interpreter, and they defined all the API for it. They have a fast C-based implementation, and we all think that Perl and Python are fast enough interpreters for scripting languages, so there's no reason that Mozilla's SpiderMonkey interpreter shouldn't be fast enough for writing applications into, especially when most of it is, you know, driving the UI. And UI code.
You're mostly blocking for user events and network events and things like
that. Right. And I assume that the model for most of those applications is that, you know, the heavy lifting computations are going to be done on the server side, you know, since they are sort of web applications ported to the desktop. So, yeah, it seems like JavaScript was a perfectly good language for that. Although I imagine that is, and I'm using this as a segue, I imagine that the experience with JavaScript and Zool is what drove interest in JavaScript 2. And really evolving the language in a way that will enable programming in the large.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that there would be a JavaScript 2 or a push so much for JavaScript 2 if people weren't interested in pushing more stuff to the client side and running that through JavaScript.
Well, and just for the size of Ajax libraries and, you know, visual effects libraries and stuff that people are using now. I think we've reached that stage where people are programming in the large without the best tools for doing it.
The lack of an include mechanism, for example, or namespaces, perhaps, or
right.
or importing. I mean, those are things I look at when I do serious programming in other languages, and if I try to do something serious in JavaScript in the same way, I run up against those limitations.
Like I said, it was a language that was created very quickly when Netscape 2 was going out the door. But yeah, JavaScript 2, which I guess everyone now just calls ES4 for ECMAScript, the fourth edition of the ECMAScript standard that's being evolved now, is going to have namespaces, classes, interfaces, iterators, generators, all kinds of stuff. Oh, types, typed variables, optionally typed variables. And they've done some really amazing stuff with types. I guess the theory of type calculus or whatever, which is an area I really know nothing about, has really grown over the last decade, I suppose, and people are really doing interesting things with that, it seems to me. You know, we've got generics in Java. ES4 takes that a level further. They're going to have parameterized types like generics. Just some really amazing stuff. And do it all in a way that's compatible with current version of JavaScript, so that current JavaScript code will continue to run. They talk about evolutionary programming. You can start with your existing code, run it in ES4, and as it grows, you start adding types here and there and evolve your objects so that some of the properties have types, some don't necessarily. They're doing amazing stuff. You read the spec, and it's like, yeah, how are they ever going to implement that? But they are plugging away at implementations, and they've got a number of different browser vendors all talking about it and working on implementations, I gather. So it's going to be exciting if it comes out.
So when you talk about compatibility, I presume you're talking about source compatibility then, because talking about binary compatibility probably doesn't apply in this case.
Right, doesn't apply to a scripting language like this. But yeah, they're working quite hard, I think, to ensure that the phrase you hear a lot monitoring the mailing list is, we can't break the web. So when browsers come out supporting this new version of the language, they have to continue to run all the legacy code that's out there.
How tied in do you think this is to HTML5 and the WhatWG group? Are they all intertwined, or are they kind of separate? How does that work, in your opinion?
I was monitoring that for a while and sort of dropped that, started monitoring the ES4 mailing lists pretty closely, and have stopped monitoring the HTML5 stuff as much. I don't hear any discussion in the ES4 mailing lists. No one's talking about HTML5 at all. And as far as I know, there isn't really overlap in the people working on it, although there's surely overlap between the companies. So there must be some sort of coordination, but no one is talking about language features that are required to implement HTML features or anything.
Well, let's move away from the web for a minute.
Okay.
Technologies like SpiderMonkey, Mozilla's standalone library that includes a JavaScript interpreter, I mean, that's been around for several years.
Yes.
But I think in many people's minds, they still think of JavaScript as a web programming language, not necessarily a standalone programming language, whereas I hear a lot of people say JavaScript is one of the most widely deployed programming environments anywhere, and it's suitable for novices to teach themselves programming and learn programming for the first time because of its ubiquity and simplicity.
Right, it's the new basic. Your computers don't come with a basic interpreter anymore the way they used to. But now, every web browser's got JavaScript interpreter, so you can try it out. Part of the reason that it's not used as a standalone language is that any embedding of it has to define its own host objects. There's no file system access, for example. It really can't do much other than, you know, count. You know, you can write loops and stuff, but you can't even output them or get user input or display output, or you can't read a file or write a file if someone hasn't defined the bindings for that. So it's suffered from that. I think JavaScript 2 could change that. Although, once again, as far as I know, there's no talk of having a standard file system API or you know, even just there's no file class built into the JavaScript 2 specification. But I imagine a fairly thin layer around a JavaScript 2 interpreter could add that, and then you have a scripting language that would be a very interesting alternative to Python, perhaps even to Ruby. I haven't tried it enough to know how I'll like it, but I tend to think that could easily become, you know, sort of my language of choice with the powerful stuff they've done with type.
But you run the risk there of fragmentation, of course. If there's no standard way to access a file system, everyone needs to invent his or her own.
Right.
That's the nice thing about Lisp. You can invent your own control structure or your object system, but the problem with that is everyone will invent his or her own object system or control structure.
Yeah, and I don't know who would release the JavaScript 2 for scripting command line version, you know, but if someone could do that and give us a standard, you know, operating system level API to files and other operating system stuff, then we've got a really powerful scripting language to use. But you're right, it really hasn't taken off except in the web browser. And the one exception to that, I suppose, is for Flash programmers who are now, I gather, working with a sort of a early version of JavaScript 2, or previous incarnation of JavaScript 2 that Adobe's released as ActionScript 3.
Hasn't ActionScript, even ActionScript 2, was more or less JavaScript with bindings to the Flash model?
Yes, yeah. As far as I know, every version of ActionScript has been a version of JavaScript. But I actually am not a Flash person, so I don't know much about it. And I don't know exactly when what version added what. So I can't really say much more about ActionScript 3, except that it's based on a very old proposal for JavaScript 2, and so it's not really compatible with what they're talking about now. But I do know that Adobe is working hard. I think they're one of the main drivers behind the ES4 specification.
And they donated part of their virtual machine to Mozilla.
That's right.
Well.
That should be interesting. I haven't followed carefully what the benchmarks are of that or anything, but I imagine it'll be a nice performance gain.
My understanding of it is, too, I mean, sometimes I'm a virtual machine guy. I haven't looked at Tamarin in any detail, but it adds some really unique features like just-in-time compilation, dynamic recompilation. That's hard to say those two words together. Some interesting technologies you see from projects like Smalltalk and StrongTalk and the modern JVM and CLR.
Right.
And so there are some real benefits to that, I think.
Right. Hopefully a very robust and fast interpreter.
But even in the case of Flash, we're still talking about a security model tied to possibly untrusted code running on the client side where you want a very strict sandbox. And you don't necessarily want file system. You don't want unfettered file system access. For one, you may not want file system access for another.
Right. Yeah, I certainly would hope that browser vendors would not go including a file system module in the web browser.
Right. And so it seems like what I hear from you, and please correct me if I'm mischaracterizing you or ECMAScript here, it sounds like a lot of the evolution of the language is still within the context of the browser and its security sandboxing.
Certainly the people working on ES4 are well aware of the browser context that, you know, will sort of be a primary focus. But I think they've also just, you know, pulled out stops and decided let's, you know, create a really, really good programming language, you know, the state-of-the-art programming language. The discussions I see going on about ES4 and the mailing lists I monitor don't seem particularly tied to the browser, although the, you know, security debates do pop up, and those are implicitly browser-centric.
It seems like an interesting creative tension to me, though. If you're thinking, all right, our main use and our main driver, the main popularity, has been this particular model, which imposes these constraints, but obviously the success of things such as Mozilla and even ActionScript to some degree demonstrate that this is an actual programming language. You can write a 1,000-page book on it, for example, which I wouldn't do for CSS, perhaps. This demonstrates that there is a real programming language. I think Douglas Crockford would say there is a there. There is, you know, as ugly as some of the parts may be, this is a quote you gave earlier, there is something nice in there. And so that creative tension between building something that's still viable for its core purpose but allowing it to evolve outside of that is interesting to me from a language design standpoint.
As I said, I haven't played with the reference implementation much, but it does seem like they've kept compatibility, but ES4 really does feel like a brand new language. From my perspective as a writer, it's going to be a brand new book to document it. What remains to be seen, of course, is how long it takes before it's out there, you know, on the web widely enough that people can start using it. So this brand new book may not have to happen right away.
Does it still retain the JavaScript flavor? And if so, what is that flavor? How do you look at a piece of code and say, this feels JavaScript-y to me?
Oh, that's interesting. I'm not sure that it does. They maintain compatibility, so, and they've got a white paper up on their website about evolutionary programming, you know, how your JavaScript 1 code can evolve piece by piece into something more robust using JavaScript 2 features. So in that sense, it retains compatibility, so there's still that small core JavaScript language is still in there, but hopefully the set of good parts is widely expanded to include all this other goodness. I imagine there'll be people who are freaked out by it. People who got scared off from Java generics, for example, might be intimidated by ES4.
But that may not be a good comparison because Java generics, I don't know a lot of people who consider that a great implementation. the debate in the Java community, I suppose you could probably talk about this even better than I can, but is that anything that takes this much to explain and understand and has these exceptions in it, not the Java exceptions, but exceptions to that's not a great feature.
You're right there. It's the sort of the corner cases with Java generics that drive people nuts, not the common use cases.
Right.
So yeah, I think JavaScript 2 is going to feel like a new language. Whether or not, average web developers will feel like they're using a new language, I don't know whether that's the case or not. It could be that it will be the library developers who are the ones that are using JavaScript 2 to create their libraries. The average web developer will just continue using those libraries and will still feel like JavaScript with which they're familiar. The other piece that we should probably talk about is that as an interim, there's also a group of people, including Microsoft and Yahoo and Google and many of the same browser vendors, working on an intermediate ES 3.1. Just a feature or a sort of bug fix release to the third edition of the specification. It'll sort of, I forget how long ECMAScript 3 has been out. It's been quite some time now. And they're kind of bringing the specification up to date with reality, with what browser vendors are doing now, adding a few very nice features to the API, some functional programming methods, some array methods that Mozilla started with Mozilla started and added in what they call JavaScript 1.6. Those look like they might get standardized. And then the language also has a few sort of hidden power user features that are really going to enhance the ability of library developers to write robust libraries.
Is this something they can deploy on a fairly quick basis?
I think the idea is that this can get pushed out more quickly than a full JavaScript 2 implementation. And I think it's important, although I don't pretend to really understand the politics there. Microsoft is actively involved in the ES 3.1 effort, and they don't seem to be actively involved in the ES4 effort.
The argument there has always seemed to me, we can't break the web, and they're talking about the dark web, all the intranets in the world, where you can't necessarily see the code.
So anyway, it seems likely that we will have this intermediate step of transitioning to ES 3.1 before we see a full JavaScript 2 based on the ES4 specification, and that we might have Internet Explorer compatibility with ES 3.1 more quickly. Because again, they're mostly standardizing what a number of browser vendors have already implemented. But once we get it all out there for everyone to start using and have standard written, I think that'll be a nice little bump in the capability of what will definitely still be JavaScript 1. It'll probably be called JavaScript 1.9 or something, I suppose. I'm not sure if that debate has been settled.
So in terms of JavaScript 2, what are the features that you're most looking for? If I could ask you what you really wanted to see most, could you give me a list of two or three things?
I spend my days writing about languages more than I spend programming them. It's been a while since I've done programming in the large that this is focused at. So I don't feel a strong need for my day-to-day work to have this language. As a computer geek, it looks like a really cool language. They've done amazing stuff with types, like I said. Very interesting work with namespaces as well. So it just looks like it would be a fun language to learn and to start using. But it's not like there's specific features that are going to make my job easier. In fact, I've actually kind of been watching the evolution of JavaScript 2 actually for years now, because there were talks about it years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, that petered out. But I've been sort of observing those with dread, knowing that when it does finally come out, it's going to be a massive rewrite or a whole new book, because it clearly is destined to be new in many ways.
And no one knows what the great new libraries or idioms are going to be yet.
Yeah, I don't think that has not shaken out yet.
In my experience, that usually takes somewhere between 2 and 5 years after a major release of a language or platform before people start saying, oh, this way works, this way doesn't. And all the designers slap their foreheads and say, why didn't we think of that 5 years ago?
Right.
Let's switch subjects for a little bit here.
Okay.
One of the interesting things about talking about web programming, I mentioned this a little bit before, you said JavaScript, we'll put HTML in there as well. I don't want to misquote you, but I think we can do this. JavaScript and HTML are the new basic. And so someone who wants to start programming can put together a web page and make a little button that changes the background color. I mean, that's an hour's worth of work for, we'll say, a 14-year-old who may or may not have a book, but he can find a tutorial on Google.
It's very true. I have long thought that it ought to be a good programming language for beginners. I don't know whether that anyone's actually using it in that way, but it strikes me as ubiquitous and straightforward enough, hampered a little bit by just the scarcity of plain text editors. You know, so many people now, when they think about writing something, they pull up a word processor, and if you do that, if you open a word processor and start typing angle brackets for HTML, they're presumably going to get escaped and come out as plain text rather than as tags. So, you know, that's one hoop that a novice is going to have to jump through, I suppose, you know, figuring out web browsers are ubiquitous, but Emacs isn't, which is perhaps a shame.
Well, I'm a Vim guy, so I don't know if I can necessarily go with you on that.
Should I hang up on you now?
No. I'll just use Viper, and we'll all be happy.
Okay.
Do you think there is a gap, though, between, I mean, speaking of text editors, do you think there's a gap between so-called real programmers and people who've just picked up something like JavaScript?
Just meaning that's the only language they know, or just meaning they've just recently learned it?
Either way.
I wouldn't say there's, I think there's just necessarily a difference between people who program as their day job and people who are learning it because they're curious or taking
some
up.
Some people who program as their day job aren't very good programmers, to be fair.
That's true. I don't think there's anything about JavaScript that makes it a lesser language, certainly, if that's what you're asking.
Right, yeah.
People who learn it through a cookbook approach, you know, using snippets of code out on the web, are likely not to really learn it very well and not really get the full flavor of what programming is all about.
But isn't that how most of us who've ever done any JavaScript picked it up?
Yes, I think that's true. And I think that's part of the reason that my definitive guide, the JavaScript book, is well received, is that people who learned it that way eventually come to that book and read it and kind of have this aha moment of, oh, it is a real programming language and it all makes sense once you get your head around it.
Well, that was certainly my first impression of it. My producer, Sarah Kim, handed me the book and I looked at it and said, oh my goodness, this thing weighs 4 pounds. There's something there.
There is something there, and, you know, a language shouldn't have to have a book that big to explain it. And, you know, to be fair, half the book is reference material for the language and for the document object model. And
absolutely, yeah.
Only half of the first half is about the language itself. So only about a quarter of the book do you have to get through to understand the language. And then the second quarter, you understand the web browser context, and then the rest is reference. It's a one-pound language, even though it's a four-pound book.
Are you suggesting that the DOM is fat?
The parts of it that are relevant to web programmers aren't actually too bad. And especially once you start cutting out all the legacy stuff that no longer is really necessary because everyone pretty much supports the standard now. You can throw out the old Netscape stuff, throw out the old IE-specific stuff. And it's not that bad. And if you ignore the stuff that has never been well supported by the web browser vendors, you know, some of the CSS style sheet traversing functions that are standardized by the DOM, you know, I don't think anyone's actually using them. I certainly couldn't tell you what browsers support them and what don't. If you just focus on the core stuff for traversing HTML documents, that's not too bad.
It sounds like there may be room for a book that's JavaScript, What Actually Works.
And that's something I've had to punt on. It was just too much. There's too many browsers, too many operating system combinations to actually test it all. In my book, I recommend the Quirks Mode website run by Peter Paul Cox. You know, I haven't actually visited it in a while, but he at least used to do a pretty good job of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't on what browsers.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, we are reaching a stage where the important stuff works on pretty much all the browsers, which is a nice place to be now.
Right.
After a decade.
This brings up my almost decade-old experience trying to get stuff working across browsers. I want to focus on that as we sort of bring this to a close a little bit. We have a lot of software. A lot of people really believe that we'll move to back to the client-server model, where we have a really, really thin client that has what's effectively the 21st century's version of the 3270 terminal emulator, which is a web browser window.
Right.
I know you write about and program in several different languages, some traditionally client-side, some traditionally server-side. What's your feel, what's your prognostication for what's appropriate client-side versus server-side versus desktop-side?
I really always have been a desktop and client-side programmer. I've done very little server-side work. I started writing about Java back when it was for the desktop and, you know, was applets on the web browser. I just think you should take my prognostications with a grain of salt because I don't feel like I've got my thumb on the pulse of the industry. You know, I can follow the language well and explain languages well, but I can't really predict. I tend to favor pushing stuff onto the client. You've got the CPU is just sitting there. Might as well use it. And perhaps that's just my bias as a traditionally client-side and desktop programmer, that I'd rather have that control there on the client and do as much processing on the client side as I can, you know, freeing up bandwidth and server cycles.
And in terms of where the client is a web browser versus, we'll call it a traditional, I'm making the scary quotes in the air here, the traditional desktop application, any strong opinion either way there?
The browser does keep evolving to have more and more features we can take advantage of, and it does seem like that's where you get your cross-platform compatibility
right.
to do it in the browser. So it does seem like there's a lot of possibilities there. I would love to see more options for writing web-style applications that look like desktop applications that can be launched. You know, you can have an icon on the desktop, but really what's going on under the covers is it's launching up a browser window that looks like a desktop window or something.
You're probably looking forward to things like Gears and Prism then, right?
You know, I haven't looked at Gears much at all, and I haven't even heard of Prism yet. I'm sorry to say, but...
Well, that's okay.
But it does seem like there's a lot of promise there. You know, I haven't looked at Adobe Air or Java FX stuff. I think they're all kind of trying to capture some share of that. But yeah, it does seem like doing it in a scripting language like JavaScript and building upon a web API based on open standards gets us around all the platform incompatibilities that we'd have to deal with if we were writing native applications.